On Monday, we read from your letters. During our show last week on the 9/11 Commission recommendations, we spoke with Asa Hutchinson, the Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security in the Department of Homeland Security. One caller said her daughter gets stopped at airports because her name is on a watch list. Mr. Hutchinson suggested calling the Transportation Security Administration Ombudsman. Many of you asked for the website address. We have that for you now. It is www.tsa.gov/public/contact-us. We received the most emails last week in our response to our show on election readiness. During that program, we talked about the shortage of poll workers and mentioned that the average age of poll workers is 72. Francine Lindberg wrote in to say, that's a good thing. My 77-year-old mother has been volunteering in her local polling place for years. She has the wisdom and experience to get the job done right. Let's not forget, Reagan was 70 when he entered office. Eisenhower was 71 when he left office. Plenty of older people continue to serve their country past the age of 70. We got another email about poll workers from John in St. Louis, Missouri. Part of the problem in getting poll workers in some places, he wrote, is that they're required to declare party allegiance. I was turned away in St. Louis County because I was a libertarian. Well, we called in some help for this one. Joining us now to respond to John and a few more election questions is Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Neil.
Well, in response to John's comments, are some poll workers turned away if they don't have a political party?
They are, in fact. There are some areas of the country that not only allow but require poll workers to be from the political parties to fulfill sort of the old poll watcher aspect of poll working. But that's not the only obstacle that individuals can face in becoming poll workers. We've heard stories of students around the country who want to serve as poll workers in their adopted hometowns where their colleges are and are unable to do so because they are not able to be registered voters in those jurisdictions. So while the need is great for poll workers, sometimes the requirements for becoming a poll worker can frustrate individuals' ability to do so.
Here's another question from Stephen in Washington, D.C. I'm curious to know what happens if the power goes out. I don't think the vote can be delayed. Is Stephen right?
That's definitely something that jurisdictions are going to have to be concerned with. I can tell you that the state of Georgia has invested quite a lot of time and energy in making sure that their new electronic machines are operational, up to and including sending a care package out that includes a flashlight and one of those night lights that turns on when the power goes out. What jurisdictions will do in the event of a power failure will, of course, vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but you can bet that it will involve some sort of paper recourse because the vote usually cannot be delayed.
And from Mark in Minneapolis, he suggests an idea to improve voter turnout. Why do we vote on a Tuesday, a work day, he writes? Wouldn't it elicit greater voter turnout if we made the Tuesday in November a national holiday? Other countries vote on Saturday and Sunday. I think the U.S. should vote on the weekend instead of a work day. So any chance of any of those suggestions coming around?
Well, that listener is certainly not alone in believing that perhaps election day on a Tuesday isn't the best idea. The problem is that no one can agree on when a better day would be. And folks who study voter turnout are concerned that moving Election Day to a weekend would actually weaken turnout, as some of the folks who are now going to the polls might actually have even better things to do on a weekend than they would do on Tuesday. So I think there's some sentiment to move Election Day, but until the academics and the policymakers can get together on what a better alternative would be, we'll probably still be voting on Tuesdays for the foreseeable future.
Doug, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org. And we end with a correction. During our show on adolescent literature, John Kelly wrote in to point out that a caller misidentified a line from Sherlock Holmes. The line is "the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime." We checked. John's right. Indeed, the line is not from The Hound of the Baskervilles. It's from a story called Silver Blaze, which is about the disappearance of a famous winning racehorse. In the course of the investigation, a young police officer asks the immortal detective if there was any piece of evidence he should consider more closely. Yes, Holmes replies, "the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime." When the astonished young man says the dog did nothing in the nighttime, Holmesian logic led inexorably to the conclusion that the stable dog did not bark because he recognized the late-night visitor. The trainer, it turns out, was trying to steal the horse. Case solved. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.